Very lovely saying. I can't right now because I've been nominated to a Latin Grammy, so I have to go.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to El Cafecito, the podcast of the Latin American Studies Program at the Spanish and Portuguese Department at U of T. My name is Sara Chocano Barbosa, and I'm one of your two hosts for Season 6, Making Community. In this episode, I will talk to Roxana Escobar Ñañez, an Afro-Peruvian PhD candidate at U of T's Geography and Planning Department. It is truly an honor to have her back in El Cafecito. If some of you loyal listeners remember, she was a key collaborator of Radio Viral a few seasons ago. Roxana is a powerhouse. Her doctoral project has recently received two important awards, the Conrad Public Scholar Fellowship and the International Doctoral Research Award. Also, this is a special episode here at Cafecito, as we will honor Black History Month, which is also known as Afro-Latinx History Month. Thus, today, we will talk about Roxana's experience as an Afro-Peruvian scholar, her interest in Black and feminist Latinx geographies, her fieldwork in Lima's Afro-Peruvian soundscapes, and her previous work as an activist. We hope you enjoy the episode! Hola, Roxana, and welcome back to El Cafecito. It is a pleasure to be here with you today. I'm also so excited because we are kicking off the month of February, also known as Black History Month, learning about your incredible work. How are you feeling today?
I'm feeling very good, thank you.
Amazing. So to kick off with the interview, can you please tell us about what is human geography to you? And more specifically, how has this field helped you understand Black and feminist Latinx geography?
For me, human geography is a way of understanding human social interactions through a space. So a space becomes part of the lived reality of human beings and the constructions, the social constructions that they make. It has helped me understand particularly Black and feminist Latinx geographies because I believe in the region of Latin America, there is a need to comprehend how a space interacts constantly with race, gender, and indigeneity in ways that I haven't seen before. Like the region is mostly, people from the region mostly focus on sociological and anthropological analysis, which they are great and they have helped us to know a little bit of our peoples and our populations in the region, but I don't feel that an understanding of how space interacts with everyday life has been the focus of analysis. And I'm seeing from feminist Latinx geographies and with Black geographies from North America, but also applied to the Latin American region, I'm seeing how space can be probably game-changing in order to understand our lives and our livelihoods.
This sounds very interesting, and I think your work does disrupt a lot of the imagined geographies, especially in Latin America as a region, but also in Peru and especially Lima, where your research is situated. A lot of people don't know, but there's a large Black population in Lima, and it's almost invisibilized. So your work going into the field and seeing how these livelihoods shape the spaces in Lima is very important, but it's also very disruptive. And I know you recently came back from your fieldwork in Lima, and I understand a lot of your fieldwork in both partying in Peñas. So can you tell us what is a Peña and how has this experience been as you being an Afro-Limeña, but also you're a researcher?
Okay, so my research is on how Afro-Peruvian performances, particularly performances of a particular Limeño sound and music that is called Criollo music. So what I'm trying to understand is how the performances and activities and presence of Afro-Peruvian women in Criollo music and in Criollo culture are immensely important for Lima's urban life and for how the city has become to be a city. So criollismo or criollo culture will be like an urban subculture of the city of Lima that is present since the end of the 1800s. So it's very important. And Afro-Peruvian women have been at the center of it since the beginning of it. So for example, being performances, singers, but also cooks, also dancers, also just the life of the party. So there is a way of understanding Black geographies that is, it has to be located as territory or as place or as a space. We can look for Black geographies in other spaces. And I like what you mentioned before about imagine geographies, because we have to reimagine sometimes a space to locate our people and to locate us as part of a space. So Catherine McKendrick, for example, who is a scholar that I follow and I admire very much, she says that Black geographies, they have to be interdisciplinary. They have to be a mix between art and sociology and physical environmental studies, but also through music. That's what I'm doing. I'm understanding music as a way in which Blackness is being spatialized. The best example for me is, for example, when you go to Lima and you are recommended to do something fun in Lima, you're usually being recommended to go to a Peña Criolla, Criollo party, and you are usually having a blast. And usually those parties have Black women at the center of it, as dancers, as singers, as performers, as musical producers, as musical directors, as cooks, as the owners of the parties, etc. But also, like, if you are in a bus in Lima around noon and you're listening to the radio in the bus, you're usually listening to an Afro-Peruvian Criollo performance in the radio and in the bus. So Black music is all around. Black music is everywhere in the city. It's acknowledged that it's important for a city, but not necessarily Black people are acknowledged to be important for the city. Their labor and their performance are usually part of Peruvian pride, Limeño pride, but their presence can be extremely uncomfortable because there is this notion that Blackness belongs to the past. Mm-hmm. Or that Black people belong to the past, previous to, it was just during the colonial times, so everyone is Peruvian now, we're not Black, we're not indigenous, we're not Indian, we're not Chinese, we're not Japanese, we're all just one magical race. There's actually one Criollo song that says that Peruvian race is like the best race of the world, which is not true, because there is no one race, and because by making us all the same, is basically just following elite notions of what is to be a Peruvian, and what is to be a Peruvian has European connotations, European culture, and never really Blackness in the mix. Coming from fieldwork, what I saw was that my hypothesis of Black women being at the center of Lima's cultural and social entertainment, but also at the center of their urban life, I think it has become more clear to me that that is true. These ladies that I work with, all Afro-Peruvian and Afro-descendant women, they work a lot. They work everywhere. It's usually thought that Criollo culture is located in a few neighborhoods in Lima. It's not true. Criollo culture is just everywhere. I travel all the city constantly, going to different parties in different districts, but also restaurants and also family houses. So for example, if you are celebrating your birthday or your mother's birthday, they also travel all around the country constantly for performances. They also travel abroad all the time. They are literally spatializing Blackness constantly and everywhere. It's amazing how they sustain Lima's cultural life, and at the same time, they are constantly being invisibilized as human beings.
I was born in Lima, and I do agree that Black presence, that Afro-Peruvian presence is very there. I grew up listening to Eva Ayón, listening to Susana Baca, and not just in my home. My dad's Afro-Peruvian, so like not just in the home, but it was like something that we did everywhere in school, dance, festejo, all of these cultural interances that we kind of like experience in Lima are very present and are Afro-Peruvian. And you are very right that it's invisibilized. You said you have worked with Afro-Peruvian women. What has been your favorite anecdote during the fieldwork, or anything like sensational that you never thought that would happen?
Something that kept repeating itself is that I couldn't party as the performances partied. I couldn't keep up. So I was constantly tired, and they were partying like Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and then like coming together for breakfast or brunch on Sunday. And I was included into this WhatsApp group, and they were all making fun of me for being the youngest one, because most of these ladies are like 60 plus. And I just couldn't keep up. It was too much party. But it's not like the party of let's get super hangover, you know, let's drink a lot. It's called tertulia. It's more of a gathering, getting together, talking about very important criollo composers and remembering their music. There is kind of like a cult culture in which like you have to remember this chord from this particular song and the different versions that was made of it. And it's amazing how they just like gather together, they make music, they sing, they laugh, they cry sometimes. We eat very good food. Sometimes we have a little bit of pisco, sometimes we don't. But it's mostly just like being friends. Mm-hmm. Which is amazing. It's something that I never seen. I never thought of it as such a friendship-based culture. And there is a difference between those criollo singers who do this for the love of criollo music and those who do it just for the profit of it. There is like rift between them, and it's very interesting. Obviously, not everyone in criollo culture is black. I do believe criollo culture is black culture and black music, because in the essence of it, it has a lot of Afro-descendant people, ways of making music and ways of inhabiting a space. But it is true that also welcome people from everywhere in Lima, particularly also the elites. The white elites from Lima are also very criollo, some of them. So yeah, I couldn't keep up. I needed to rest. It was 1 week of partying, 1 week of rest. And I think the other anecdote that I really like to share is that I was about to do an interview, and I was on the phone with someone, and she was very lovely saying, "I can't right now because I've been nominated to a Latin Grammy, so I have to go." Of course, go. Don't apologize ever for being this successful. So yeah, like I've been hanging out with very marvelous people.
What was this Latin Grammy thing? I'm very curious.
The group is called Afro Punk. So take a look. Araceli Poma is the singer. She's a very well-known Afro-Indigenous singer from Peru, but she's located in the States. And she has this very, very cool, that's called Afropunk, so go look for them.
That sounds so cool. Like, I have no other words for this, but I think that's so cool that like you were talking to people who were being nominated for a Grammy, the Latin Grammy.
It's cooler
than the others. And I also saw something on your Instagram about Les Lopez sister and them being in La Voz. Yes, can you explain that? Because my family loves watching La Voz. I cannot do it because I get attached, and then if someone gets eliminated, I cry. But I saw you promoting some people you were working with. I think that's also very extraordinary.
Yeah, that was also very cool because, okay, so part of my research is focused on one particular criollo party that is called Las Lopez Sisters. And these sisters have been, you know, running this party for 46 years now. And they are the only ones that I found out until now that are the singers, the owners, and the cooks, like they run everything. If you want to find true criollo feeling and party in Lima, you should go to Las Lopez in the district of Lince. They are very good friends with another marvelous singer that is called Marina Reto. And Marina Reto, she basically introduced me to all of the other singers and her friends. They're friends from, you know, like 50 years, even more. And Sonia Berta is a singer who made it into the finals of The Voice Peru.
Sonia Berta.
Compárame. Es todo lo que te pido. And I think it's like the first time, it's a different voice, it's the voice senior. Mm-hmm. Because in Peru we have the voice kids, the voice senior, the voice generations, and the normal one. So Sonia Berta was in the voice seniors and she made it to the final. And it was actually extraordinary because no one really believed that Criollo music could make it that far. So as part of research, but also as friendship, I started hanging out with Señora Marina Reto, and she started to introduce me to Sonia Berta, so I helped her doing her campaign for getting more votes. And yeah, and she made it into the final. She didn't win, which was sad. But she did something extraordinary that she, Sonia Berta, she refused to sing very popular criollo songs, which was odd because someone made this joke to me a year or something ago about how criollo music has 20 hits and people are around the world, Peruvians around the world, but also Peruvians in Lima, they always request the same hits. And we all know what these hits are. But Sonia Berta refused to sing those hits. And she actually sung very beautiful poemic, mostly poems, musicalized poems from very obscure composers. And it sounded beautiful and it was marvelous. And I think everyone was blown away by that choice. And she made it into the final with that. That created a sensation in criollo, in the criollo spheres and the criollo groups that I belong now, that it is possible to bring criollo music back to the spotlight that it has always had in the city of Lima. But yeah, I was hanging out with her in restaurants, taking pictures, asking for everyone to vote for her. So yeah, that was also pretty cool.
That sounds lovely. I know you, we have mentioned in the introduction, you've recently won two major awards. And I'm personally very interested in, first of all, congratulations for that. But I'm also personally very interested in how your work is having a public impact, just creating an archival narrative of Afro-Peruvian people. Can you tell us about this archive and also your work with Las Lopez?
Following Catherine McKintrick, actually, which has been so important for my research on Black geographies, I also understood that I needed more than just the framework of Black geographies to understand criollo culture, because as I mentioned before, it is Black at the essence, but it's also a mix of everything that is happening in Lima. So Andean people, Chinese people, Japanese people, and the white elites as well. So I started using Latinx, feminist Latinx, indigenous methodologies for my research, following Sofia Zaragozin, for example. It's been important for me because it has allowed me to understand the complexities of the spaces, of urban spaces in Latin America, when Blackness and indigeneity are at the core of it, but they are actually never highlighted as such. Right? There is this understanding that Blackness and indigeneity are backwards and they are not part of urban life. And what criollo music is showing is the complete opposite. It's not essentially indigenous, it's not essentially Black, but it's a part of the composing of it. For me to keep looking into the different geographies of criollo culture, I want to do a familiar archive exhibition of Afro-Peruvian performances of criollo music. And I'm working on that right now. And that's part of the Connaught Fellowship that I was awarded last year. So I'm going to do that with the Afro-Peruvian National Museum. And it's coming soon, hopefully by the end of this year. That's a way of also showing space and time together, and showing the diversity of Blackness within criollo culture, because Blackness in Peru, as you know, different from other parts of the Americas and even South America, Afro-descendant people comes in different shapes and color skin. And that diversity is very well represented in criollo culture. So I want to do that. I want to show that diversity. I want to show the family archives of these performances. To the best of my knowledge, there is no familiar archives of Black peoples in Latin America yet, so it's a huge endeavor. That's why I'm taking my time to do it. And also I'm doing it with the help of, well, the Lopez sisters are kind of the center of these family archives. Also like to kind of decolonizing what are archivals, what archives are, and what are family archives, how do they look like? Because the way in which they have archived their information is not systematic. And it's not following Occidental ways of seeing history. It's a little bit of newspapers and a little bit of one picture. But it's basically sounds and it's memory. So I'm trying to kind of recreate something that can help us understand how Criollo culture has evolved through blackness, from a black point of view, basically. It's good to see that Canada, particularly the University of Toronto, but now also like the federal government of Canada, is taking a chance on Afro-Latinx studies. I haven't seen that before, and it seems like the perfect moment to start doing that, but also I'm really appreciate how they are open to see blackness from the diaspora of Latin America with a serious focus, not only like this stereotypical ways of seeing black people from Latin America, they're very much based on Brazil and Colombia, but also as a focus of study themselves.
That sounds amazing. Congratulations again, and also I'm in awe of everything that's going on and how much you're working and disrupting again. Like, I think that's a word of the podcast, disruption. And a lot of your work, like you've been saying, your archival work involves families and, again, your culture and music. Do you have any favorite singers or songs that you would like to share with El Cafecito?
Yes. I think my favorite singer now, after a year and something of doing field work, it would be La Señora Marina Reto. I think she has become my favorite singer. She has some songs in YouTube, but that is also part of how Criollo music is being archived. Like, most of these singers are very low-key, are moving in very in domestic spaces or not so well-known mainstream spaces. The archival of their music is a video here on YouTube, a video there on Vimeo, but no Spotify, for example. They're not getting into those platforms. They even still move on CDs. I have come to Toronto with lots of CDs that I have no way to listen to because I have no CD player at all. So I had to buy actually a Discman to start listening to those songs. So I think La Señora Marina Reto will be my favorite one until now. I also really like a singer. She's new to Criollo music, but not new to Criollo culture. Her name is Nancy Izquierdo. And she's reviving a Criollo genre that has been kind of lost, that is called Marinera Limeña. And she's doing it in such an amazing way. That is amazing. It's truly breathtaking. And, well, the popular ones are usually Eva Young, Lucía de la Cruz, Rosita Guzmán. They do have work on Spotify and Apple too, so I do encourage you to listen to them.
Thank you so much. And just to end with it, we have this dynamic where we ask people to tell us about their coffee recommendations on campus. So can you please tell us what's your favorite coffee spot here on campus and what do you order?
Yeah, I usually go to L'Espresso, which is on Bloor and St. George. I've been going there for 7 years now. They have very, very good coffee and they have a U of T discount if you show them your U of T card. I order the cappuccino with almond milk or oat milk, depending on my mood of that day. And sometimes I order the espresso, which is very strong. And for a PhD student, it's very well needed.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Roxana, for the interview. I will be linking all of your social media on the post. Thank you so much. And again, your work is amazing and thank you so much for doing it, and congratulations again on everything that you're achieving.
Thank you. Thank you. I hope to be here back soon.
You will.